You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Just One Outdoors Podcast. Today is a very special episode. We have kind of three guests, kind of a guest co-host situation. As our team develops, we're going to be getting some of the team on. So tonight, Trevin's joining us. Trevin, say hi.
What's up, everybody? This is Trevin Beatty with Beatty Custom Calls.
But tonight, we're talking to the Fit to Hunt staff. Right, Jack? You're on the staff.
Dude, after that turkey season he had this year, he's
absolutely on the staff. Yeah. But we have some friends of the podcast on. We're really excited to talk to them about really turkey. We may dive in and go down, obviously, other rabbit holes. But they went down to Texas, killed it down there, and then even came back here and showed Trevin and I how to kill birds in Missouri because we struggled a little bit. But guys, Jeremy, now. Jack, Trevin, welcome to the show. Let's dive into, I guess everyone knows Jeremy, but Jack, why don't you give a little rundown of who you are and what you like to do?
Well, I mean, I'm Jack Kerber. I'm Jeremy's son. I'm a big wrestler. I like to lift weights and get in the outdoors as much as possible.
Amen to that. It's really making me feel bad that he looks bigger than I am, and I'm afraid he could take me, which is
easily. Oh yeah,
he surpassed me in the weightlifting capacity at this point in time. So, and that's all right. You know, every dad wants his son to be better than him. Well, he's officially better, so it's all good.
Thank you. Now, with wrestling, you went to state this year, right?
Yep.
How'd you do?
Not great. But I'm working on it again. Next year will be better.
Hey, I mean, going to state is a big accomplishment. I know for soccer, I never went. Trevin, obviously, I mean, you can look at him with his mustache. He never went.
I'm a former state champion baseball player, just so you know.
Are you really?
Yep. Solid. This was eighth grade, though.
I guess the mustache does kind of say baseball player.
Hey, I mean, come on. But, especially wrestling, since it's like an individual sport. I mean, it is like you have a team, you have a wrestling team, but it is very individually. I mean, you got to put in the effort. You don't have to count on somebody else putting in, you know, their share. So how was that for you, Jack? Like your training? I mean, obviously, Jeremy as your dad, he's going to push you as hard as he can. But, I mean, how was this season, you know, productively for you? How do you say you grew this season, you know?
Well, my training partner at my school, Drew, he's really big into it. His dad was a coach, so he kept pushing me the whole season, basically to my max. I mean, there were some days where he, like, physically broke me, but then he's my teammate, so he helped me build me back up, and without him, I would not have made it to state. So
that's awesome.
It. Our team's got, like, four people, including me, that are actually dedicated to it. So apart from that, like you said, it's basically individual.
It's funny because, you know, you think you want to go out there and you just want to be able to hand it to somebody and you're going to get better. Mm. And the reality, especially with the wrestling club that he trains with, they've got a kind of a 33% mentality, if you want to go that route. 33% of the time, you need to be handing it out to somebody. I mean, you're whipping them. 33% of the time, you're 50-50. And then 33% of the time, you're getting it handed to you.
Yeah.
And so if you have that, and that's what he had, okay? Yep. Everybody in the room was, you know, there were those that he could go out, because the giving it to somebody, that builds confidence. The 50-50 shows you how to overcome things. The getting it handed to you is just you keep making the same mistake over and over and over. And eventually you realize, hey, that guy's catching me in this. So it all serves a purpose, and so I got to hand it to him. He's working a full-time job right now this summer. He lifts 5 days a week, and he's wrestling 2 days a week, and he doesn't miss. Like, when we finish wrapping this up, I'm going to start loading to head to Wisconsin tomorrow. He's gonna go to the gym. That's just how he does it.
Yep.
That's awesome.
I bang the weights around.
What I've noticed just with connecting with your dad and following him, is how much work you put into it. And it reminds me of like my soccer playing days and how dedicated I was. And it makes me feel good that like there's guys coming up behind me that put in that work for their sport. And, you know, I remember talking with your dad when he was down here, and I'll have you kind of share the turkey hunt, but, or why you got to go on this turkey hunt, because it wasn't just a, hey, you know, we're going to go down to Texas and turkey hunt. But from what he said, you earned it. So
yeah.
Jeremy, can you tell us a little bit about kind of the, I guess, deal you made with him and how he got to go on this hunt?
You know, to take a baseball analogy, I mean, how unfair would it be for me to say, hey, you need to go out and hit a home run and I'll give you, you know, an ice cream cone. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And especially in the sport of wrestling, I mean, there was one kid that we were watching, and he ended up placing third place in the state tournament, which is great. But what a lot of people didn't realize this is that he lost his first round match. So if you lose two, you're out. So he had to go through the wrestlebacks, and that's usually about a 5 to 7 match grind to get to that third place
that
position.
The Oakville kid?
That's the Oakville kid.
That was crazy.
And he was winning like 3-2. 4-3, you know, and what
you
I'm getting.
Tell him what was wrong with him, though?
Yeah, he basically had no knee left. I mean, he's 17 years old, and he was limping all over the place. I mean, the guy did it on one leg.
He had one good shoulder too. His other shoulder was dislocated.
So anyway, that's the state tournament. It's almost like the Stanley Cup playoffs. You got two teams that are just equal, and a freak bounce of a puck goes in, and you win in overtime. So what I told him, I said, look, you know. He's thinking about going in the trade school, all right? He wanted to be better at wrestling, so we just started talking. We started setting some goals, and I said, here's what I want you to understand. I said, here's grades, here's wrestling, here's just being, you know, what I would say a good person. I said, let's set some targets out here. And I said, it's not about if you go to state. It's not about if you win a medal, but I was like, I can tell whether you're working or whether you're not working. I mean, that's, you know, whether it's school or whether it's, and so what we did was we said, look, we're going back to Texas in the spring. And I said, if you can do all these things, right? Because if you take care of your grades now, it's not going to matter if you miss a day or two of school at that point, you know, we'll figure that part out. And he did, you know, and you know, there, I think there were two things to that. So the year before last, he was cutting a lot of weight. Like a lot of weight, and it really messed with him emotionally and mentally because he was constantly tired, constantly hungry, constantly cranky. This year he cut weight, but he didn't go down to his lowest weight class until right before the state tournament. So that was one thing. So just emotionally and mentally he was in a better spot. But you know, keeping that carrot dangled out there and saying, look, you know, when you step foot on this ranch, it's you're gonna get to do something pretty darn special. I mean, this is incredible stuff out there. You didn't know what you were gonna see. You know, it could be an audit, it could be a pig, it could be turkeys. And just driving on that thing, I mean, looking over at him once we crossed that cattle guard, you know, you could tell he realized that the work was 100%. I don't know, was it worth it?
100%. Yeah. Awesome.
So legit. With that, Jack, how was your first experience hunting Rios as compared to Easterns?
It was crazy. I mean, the first gobbler ever killed was a Rio. I guess not a whole lot of people in Missouri can say that, but I mean that ranch kind of spoiled us, to be honest. It was awesome.
Yeah, I was keeping up with your dad.
The rain, it wasn't a whole lot different. Turkeys were kind of, they weren't used to people, so they're easier to kill, but First 24 to 48 hours on there, it was very, you never want to use the word easy, but these birds, they hunt sheep, they hunt whitetail. The turkeys had just been left to do whatever turkeys do, so they had never really had any pressure put on them. And, you know, just like Easterns, you throw a couple shots their way, and
they learn pretty fast.
They learn pretty quick, right?
And the first night, there was gobblers roosting, like, right above the house in the trees in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
So, what?
Yeah, we walked out, you know, after, I don't know, whatever time, because Jim had killed. That's another thing. So Jim Richmond, we should talk about that too, because
He killed two right out of the gate. Like, we weren't there for 40 minutes, and he killed bam, bam. So, just like that. And that night, he decided he always wanted to kill one with a bow and film it. So, not only did he film it, not only did he kill one with a bow, he was outside of a blind. He was sitting up against a tree with a little bit of scrub brush in front of him, and, you know, and got these here. So, you know, the birds themselves, after that first 24 hours, they started... For the most part, they started acting more like turkeys, right?
Yeah.
There were a couple scenarios. This was a 3,000-acre ranch, so there were a couple pockets that we got back to that these were new birds. They hadn't seen anybody back in there. So, you know, we didn't even touch – we even scratched the surface.
Yeah, we probably walked over like 500 acres max.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It was
– wow.
It's the kind of place that we had to keep like landmarks in sight because we started chasing this bird one day. And, I mean, you know, we're not out in the jungle by any stretch of the imagination, but it was one of those situations where we're kind of weaving through the brush, and at one point I'm like, you know what, let's make sure we keep that big hill over there to our left so we kind of know where we need to get back to after that. But yeah, it was the only thing I think we wish we'd have brought with us, because there was a situation one afternoon where Jim and Jack and myself went out, and Jim had his camera, we were filming behind, I was up, and there was a gobbler strutting, and I think if we had had a fan, it was about 150 yards away, I think he had a hen with him, and he was just, but I think he would have come had we had something that we could have flashed up in there. But overall, you know, your hunts, I mean, you did everything.
It was crazy.
So, yeah, tell them about
it. Which one, the first or second?
I don't know.
One?
What do you want to hear about?
Let's start
both
with the yeah. We want
both
to hear both, but let's start with that. The first one.
The first one was honestly, it was kind of surprising because I've turkey hunted basically my whole life, and not had the greatest luck.
Actually, let's back up a little bit more. All right, so the ride down. Let's talk about that.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I don't know how familiar you are with Missouri, but you know, from St. Louis to Poplar Bluff is about, I don't know, 2.5-3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little tummy sick.
Right? No.
Yeah, like on the side of the road.
Oh, no.
It was brutal.
It was bad. Now, we don't need to go any further into that. I mean, everything was out of the car. We're fine. But when we got down there, I mean, he went into the house and he fell asleep. Yeah, like, he was out.
Oh, man.
And, you know, it's like, well, we're going. So I went and I got him. And I said, hey, we're going up to where we saw some birds. We drove around the ATV. We saw where they were. And, I got, they were there. We had a gobbler on us within 15, 20 minutes, and he's coming. But we had a Jake poke its head in the brush right behind, came right behind us, started putting, blew it all up to heck. But he was hurting. Like, he was not in a good way. I mean, he
felt
like,
struggling to stay awake.
Yeah.
My stomach hurt.
My gosh.
You know, we've been up for 24 hours, you know, so imagine what you feel like when you're sick. And now...
You've been up 24 hours.
That thing, man.
That was day one, right? Afternoon one. So after next morning, that's when stuff really got good.
Yeah, next morning, I woke up and I felt fine again, so that was a plus. And, I mean, we got out to it wasn't a blind, where we were sitting. And I think within 10 minutes of sunlight, a couple of hens walked out. I think 10 minutes after that, two gobblers walked out. And one of them definitely saw me, and I could just hear Jim going, kill him, kill him. So I just... put the bead on his head, fired, and that was the hunt. The first one was very quick.
How long from, like, start to finish do you think the hunt was? Like, getting out there?
Oh, yeah.
45 max.
Oh, my gosh.
And all that.
That's amazing.
It was
Dude.
Crazy.
I'll tell you something that I noticed that I have not noticed in Missouri was because you kill four down there, okay? And he ended up getting a second one the next morning. Well, he and I went out the morning after that, and before the sun was really, I mean, it was shooting light, but I mean, it was still dark. Like, according to the clock, you can shoot, but according to, like, you know, visibility, it wasn't great, and there were gobblers on the ground. I mean, they were out of the tree,
really?
And they were,
yep,
they were doing it. I mean, I was shocked how, yeah, so that was one. So that was
the second one was by myself, so it was not only my second Rio, but it was my first solo bird ever. And
I mean, kind of the same story. I went to the same place, actually, and I was just sitting there. I was on my phone, actually, and all of a sudden I hear, like, this a weird noise I've never heard in a while before, and I look up, and there's a hen just, like, probably, like, 5 feet max in front of me, and I'm just sitting there, like, frozen. It doesn't see me yet. I'm tucked away, and eventually it walks off, and then, not gonna lie, I kind of get distracted again. I hear another weird noise. I look up, and there's a deer, again, right there. Same story. It wanders off. Then there's another hen. And then I think about 15 minutes after that, sun starts to set. I look over the hill, and I see two big birds coming down. I'm 90% sure they're gobblers. And long story short, they were. And that time I actually had some choice, because I'd already killed one. I didn't have to worry. I just chose the biggest one and got him down. So I barely had to call.
This is awesome. That makes me jealous.
We just finished. I finished his tail fans last week, over the weekend. You know, I still had an Eastern from a couple of years ago that I had salted out, and I was like, I need to put these things together. These mountain birds, and that's what we called them, were Texas Hill Country mountain birds. Mm. Jim killed one that was, I think, 19. I think my two were like 18 and 17. He killed one, and it was a mature bird, right?
Mm-hmm.
13 pounds. I mean, they're what? Just...
They're on the smaller side.
They're on the smaller really? Side, but they're fun, man. And, you know, people say that reals don't gobble. Man,
they weren't as loud. They gobble. They definitely did gobble.
They gobble. They may not have the hit like an Eastern, but the day we tried to kill Lucky, that was the day.
Multiple days we tried to kill Lucky.
Yeah, multiple days. Yeah, so, you have to talk about Lucky. You have to talk about Lucky. Right?
We need to talk about Lucky the Turkey. Yeah, we certainly do. But it was pretty awesome. Where we're sitting at, man, there's all kinds of scrub brush out there. And there's some spots that probably you could get really good and tucked in. We found a few of those. But, like, the areas where we were seeing most birds, that's the funny thing, is that there wasn't a ton of natural cover. I mean, you got scrub oaks and you got some little brush here. They weren't, like, super wary. But you'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden you turn around, and there's a hen, and she's made you. Now, there's so many turkeys down there, it didn't really matter. But probably like taking a ground blind out or something to that effect would have been much more effective, because they're coming from every angle, and there's just not a great place to get set. Not really. Yeah. So, yeah.
Huh. That's something that... we need to do, Trevin. We need to do a just one hunt down there.
It's great. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, what you were saying about those gobblers hitting the ground before it even gets light outside, I took one of my coworkers for his first ever turkey hunt in Oklahoma. We were close to the Texas border, but it was about 5:45, still pitch dark outside, and those gobblers were hitting the field. And We just watched 15 jakes fly over our head, and we could just barely see them. They looked like bomber airplanes flying over. And, I mean, I would much rather shoot a Rio than a Eastern after this year. Cause
it's fun.
They're fun, and they gobble. I took my wife out way western Oklahoma, and this bird on the roost gobbled 500 times. I kid you not. Just... one after another, and you just don't get that with Easterns. And this year especially, mm-hmm. It just seemed like those Easterns were quiet. You know, yeah. They gobble, but I mean, they're smart. It seems like they're smarter, but that kind of going into... Oh, I guess you guys had a story about Lucky. I'd like to hear that real quick.
There's a lot of stories about Lucky.
So I shot at Lucky first, okay? So Jack had already killed, Jim had killed three. And so
the
afternoon that Jack was solo hunting, Jim and I, you know, we took a camera and we went up on this hill and had two gobblers come in. And so we worked them. They'd go up, they'd come away, they'd go up. Well, all of a sudden they made up their mind, here they come, right? And so Jim, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I'm gonna shoot this biggest one. And Jim's whispering in my ear, he goes, man, if you line that thing up right, you can get two for one. And I'm like, no, you're right, you know? So, you know, turkeys, I mean, those heads are just all, so, I mean, they get as close as they can get. I let it rip. dropped the first bird, and you know, I had to singe a feather somewhere along the way, but this gobbler gets away. All right, so shot at first time this bird. So the next morning, he and I go out, right? So yep. That's the bird that was behind us that literally. So tell what? How did that unfold?
Which one was that? Is that the one where I took the bad angle? Where I was like.
Yeah, you were trying to do the. He tried to do a twisty cowboy, I think.
Yeah. Turkey kept coming in, coming out, coming in all day. And eventually, instead of like coming the main path down where we were, of course, like they wouldn't make it easy, he went down the tree line, started walking out and around. And I knew he was within like 30 yards. Like I could probably make the shot, but he was like, if I'm sitting here, he was like kind of over here. So I just take the shotgun, I go around like this, shoot, and miss it. Probably didn't even. Pellet didn't even touch him. But
that's. That's two, right?
Is that consecutive days, too?
That's consecutive hunts. So,
oh evening, my gosh.
Morning.
Right? Wow.
What? Bird.
So, the last night that we were able to hunt, Jim and our host, Steve, was talking about this place way far. Well, it wasn't even far in the back, but further back that they called the hole. And so, I'm like, I want to see it because Steve had been hunting. He was trying to kill. What was he trying to kill? Was he trying to kill all dad or was he trying to kill a pig? I can't remember what he was trying to kill.
I think he was going for whatever he could find.
The ranch owner wanted him to thin out, you know, some different. So he was back there. So he was hunting with a rifle. He wasn't hunting turkeys. And he was like, hey, man, I saw gobblers back there. I was like, okay, let's go back there. So Jim takes this guy to that same hill, all right, and... Gosh, how far did you go? How long did you guys chase that bird?
At least 3 or 4 hours. Probably like 3, honestly. But, no, I was sitting on a rock that whole hunt, and I'm not going to lie, I could not stay still. Like, I was hurting. But eventually the bird, we kind of figured out he was not coming, so it was like 15, 20 minutes left of daylight. We tried to make a move on him. And we essentially followed him up to, like, this little bluff. There was a giant tree. We could tell he was probably roosting there. And we walk up to it, and Jim goes, Jack, look, and, like 100 yards down, we can see the gobbler run away. And I'm just sitting there watching him. I mean, honestly, it's kind of cool. You can see the sun setting, and Jim goes, shoot at him. I'm like, what? It's like 100 yards. There's no way. And he goes, like the magic pellet. I'm like, all right. So I just shot. Obviously, didn't hit him. But waste of a shell. But it was pretty funny.
Which
it was a nice way to end off the hunt, honestly.
Which, yeah. Which you know, when Jim was telling me that story, I said, why did you have him shoot? He goes, why not? And I was like, all right. It's like, you know, he goes,
yeah.
Whispered in his ear, send it. And I went, oh, there you go. You know? So there's a bird that has been shot at in three consecutive hunts named Lucky running around Texas hill country. And
he's a veteran now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
He's been through it.
He's not coming to any call next year. That, yeah.
I was going to say, you going back next year to finish the business?
I think if depending on business and the invitation, I think we would. It's way different than any type of hunting for turkeys that I've ever done. So I was thinking about this the other day. I've never hunted in Florida, and I want to go west. I want to go kill Miriam, right? And I'm not talking about Nebraska Miriam. I want to go out, right? Like, have you seen that meat eater where they're out? I think it was either Montana or Idaho. I can't remember where they were, but you know they're out there with llamas and they're out where. I mean, they even said it's a good chance that these turkeys have never seen a human before. That's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'd love to get the slam, the Osceola. I'm not dying to go hunt turkeys in Florida, but you know if I got an opportunity to finish off, because I didn't, you know, I was sitting there thinking, looking at the wall the other day. I'm like, okay, I got a rear on the wall, I got several easterns. I'm like, you know what, that we might go ahead and need to finish that off.
You're almost there.
Year and a half. Yeah, yeah.
I wish. Honestly, I mean, just I was telling Austin earlier today that I'm thankful. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I'm thankful that turkey season's over so I'm excited about deer hunting. But hearing this, I'm just, let it be spring again, you know?
Yeah.
Turkey hunting, it's something special. And I know that you guys, I mean, you guys hunted hard in Missouri too. And I want to get to that, you know, because you guys had some good success too.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of, yeah, walk me through, you know, your guys' Missouri hunts, because that seemed like it had several challenges in itself.
Well, so we typically hunt. I've got 40 acres in northern Missouri. Mm-hmm. That last year was productive. All right.
This year was not.
We've got my dad's place in southeast Missouri, and then we still have several permission hunt places that we can go. There's 160 acres in little Perry. Yeah. We got a hold of 80 acres down I-44 closer towards Bourbon, Missouri, and there's pockets of birds. And so kind of what I do from a conservation perspective is, especially if you're talking 40, 50, even less than 100 acres, is depending upon how many birds I'm seeing on camera, if we kill a tom here, I'm not hunting that property anymore, even if there's birds over here because there's been so few of turkeys. So back in youth season, so this is before we even went to Texas, Justin killed a Jake. We put that up on the YouTube channel the other day.
Yep.
And that was fun. So we go to Texas, and we get back, and we got back at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I got up around 8 and went out later that morning to that Bourbon property, and had one coming, had a dog run through the set that kind of blew that. But then, you know, I took off that whole week. So what I did, I wanted to hunt with my grandpa. So he's 88, so I went down and we hunted with him and called one in, and he was asleep and didn't see it, and that's the story all in itself. But I went back to the very same spot the next day, 30-mile-per-hour wind, didn't hear a gobble till 12:30, and had a bird dead on the ground at 12:42. We could only hunt till 1 in Missouri, so we're going there. Well, I take him the very next weekend to our farm up north because we'd gotten pictures right before we left from Florida. I've got a 2-acre clover plot. Every night on this camera, this gobbler, this longbeard, was coming down, and I knew exactly what tree he was going to. He's walking right in front of the camera like clockwork. He and I go up there, it's a Saturday morning, and we sit, no goblin. I mean, we sat there probably till 10:30, 11 o'clock, nothing. I said, let's grab the cameras. We went and got the cameras. There was not a gobbler on that property. And I said, you know what, we need a pivot. We need to pivot quick because my wife was going to come up and hunt the next morning. So we just packed up. You know, there were a couple hens, but there were, you know, three cameras all over clover fields. There should be a male bird, and there's nothing. So I took Beth out to the Bourbon property, 80 acres, mostly timber. And I sent Jack to my dad's farm because while we didn't have a ton of success down there in youth season, early on, like this is like early on, like early March, my youngest son wanted to go squirrel hunt. So I took him up and got him set up there. And I ran a diaphragm call just for giggles. And 10 birds came running over the hill, all Jakes. So we knew there was a big wad of Jakes running around that place. So, you know, Jack, he's 17. I said, all right, son, this is the real deal, right? Because I'm sending you down the road with weapons.
Mm-hmm.
On dad by yourself, you know, which is helps there. But I mean, that was his first. He solo, went solo, solo, but this is, yeah, like you said, your first solo.
That's the only help I got, was taking pictures.
Right. So yeah, talk us through that one.
Well, I got up about 4 o'clock, a little earlier than I probably needed to, but I didn't want to mess anything up. Wanted to make sure I had enough time.
I thought you put birds to bed that night.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So the way the property sets out is you kind of like drive up on this little hill where they keep a bunch of cattle, and there's like a machine shed up there. And then over towards the big cornfield. So I went up there. I didn't even take my call out to roost them, and there's turkeys in the field. And I saw they kind of like wandered over a hill, so I didn't call. I'm like, all right, this is all I need to know. So next morning I drive out there. I went probably like 50 yards away from where I saw those turkeys. I actually got in the wrong spot. He had a little like spot set up that had a way better view, but I went probably like 5 feet away from that, so the grass was like over my head, so I could barely see the field I was hunting. But eventually I hear a gobble far off, and about 10 minutes after that I see some like just the heads pop in the field and go back down, up, down. Eventually they work their way towards me, and I'm sitting there, I got the gun up, and I'm like, all right, if I see another head, I'm gonna take a shot. And I look over and I see two more Jakes coming, and I'm like,
like, this is legit. We got like five birds in the field. So one Jake I watched come across, and then his head went down the grass. And they popped it up right there, final time. I took the shot. I thought I missed, actually. I didn't hear any flopping or anything, so I just sat down for another 10 minutes. Finally, I was like, all right, it's time to go home. I got already shot two Rios. I wasn't hurting. And as I'm walking out, then I hear flopping. I look over, and in the ditch right next to me, I see the Jake flopping around. I was like, we got it done, you know? Got it done with what? What were you using? The Beatty custom
call. The Beatty custom call.
Hey, I was going to say, you sent me a message that morning saying, hey, we got it done. And I was ecstatic.
You must have sent them the calls that work. Because you didn't, my calls didn't work, so you're gonna need to send me the calls at work.
You know, I don't know. It works for a lot of other people, Austin. I don't know if that's user error or.
It also didn't work for it. Well, I guess it did kind of work when you were here with us. We almost got it done.
What can I say? Texas,
and I do this anyway, right? I usually will start with a box, I'll move to a pot, and then I'll go to a diaphragm. I do have it's like my baby. It's like an old HS Strut push button. I mean, they don't even make these things anymore. So, like, if I give it to him, I'm like, do not break it. But the problem with Texas, like I was telling you, was there was so little brush to get hidden into. You know, you could strike them with the pot call, but as they're coming in, you had to go hands-free because there was just nothing. I mean, it's like you see on TV where they're sitting out there almost in the middle of nothing.
Yeah,
and they shoot these birds. That's kind of what it was like to a certain extent. You know, you might get a few little scrub brushes here and there, but you better be set up and ready. Mm. Which with his ADHD, it did. It was hard for him because you know you can't sit there on that rock for 4 hours and then all of a sudden, because they, you know as well as I do, man, those things slip up in the craziest places. You know, they won't say a word and they're in your lap. So
yeah. Did you notice like? In Texas, did you use any decoys or anything? Like, what are the differences? What big differences did you notice between, like, hunting Rios in Texas and Easterns in Missouri?
So, I'll tell you about what we did last year and then what I did this year, okay? So, last year, Jim and I got to this ranch, and we went out, and we put two decoys out, all right? Just two hens. We weren't even working with strutters. And a big group of hens came walking up, and they just put the brakes on. And they just looked at it, and they turned around and walked right away. And I'm like, huh, that's odd. Mm. Another group comes in about 10 minutes later, and they do the exact same thing. They walk up, they see those decoys, they put the brakes, and Jim goes, go take those decoys down. So, and at that point, they started coming in. So I don't know if they look different. I don't know if they didn't expect them to be there. This year, I put one morning, the morning that he killed with Jim, I put one out. And I can't tell you that it hurt me, and I can't tell you that it helped me. I mean, two hens came in. That was the only thing that I saw that morning. And they came in. They kind of looked at it, and then they just pecked right alongside. So I think going back to that hunt that I was telling you about, I feel like if we'd had a tail fan, I think that would have probably been more advantageous to get that bird to break and come through. He and I went up. It was actually the same the morning that I used that decoy, foggy. I mean, it was not a good turkey morning. And we get done, we ate breakfast. It's about 11 o'clock, and Jim looks at me and he goes, "They should be getting loud right about now." So I said, "Jack, grab your stuff," and we hiked up on the mountain. And once we got up, we'd call, walk 100 yards, call. Walk 100 yards. So we hit this bend that's heading back to the area that I'd set up in earlier, probably about maybe a quarter mile away. And I hit this call, and he's there. Like he gobbled, right? Mm. So, Jack, sit down over here. I'm sitting here. And honestly, there's a couple – we screwed the pooch on a couple of different reasons here because, number one, I'm sitting there playing with a tacticam. I mean, he gobbled. He was over, right? And I'm like, I'm expecting him to come up the road – all the time in the world. So Jack's sitting there, I've got a GoPro running, life is great, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna you know, hit that. I had your call. I hit that call, and he explodes in our face. He's there. I mean, it wasn't like he came through the thickest of the, I mean, the stuff that turkeys aren't supposed to come through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had about a 6 to 8 inch window that he was right there. Didn't know after the fact that Jack had a clear view to him. So I'm like, son, next time, if you got a clear view, because I was the shooter, but I'm like, you have two more tags to burn. So I threw a shell at him, but it was one of those when he came through and he realized what it wasn't. I mean, you've seen them stretch their necks up. I mean, it looked like his neck went up that far.
Yeah.
Turned, and as he turned, I let it rip, and it just went, you know, I just missed him clean. But I'm telling you, Trevin, like going back to what you were talking about with how Easterns are gobble, and then they just zip up. I mean, I get them to gobble too, like midday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kill mine in Missouri. But the amount of gobbling and what they will do, like up into the day, was different. You know, they may not have it as you know, echoing or booming of a gobble like an Eastern, but man, as far as overall gobbling activity, they weren't hard to find. You know,
yeah,
they were in the mood. You knew where they were as far as that goes.
Hmm.
And even though he missed him, dude, we still played with him for another 90 minutes. He just back and forth, and eventually he made us and decided he was gonna go. But I mean, we shot at him, and he still was playing this game of coming up and going back right there.
So yeah,
it was insane.
Yeah, and one thing that I noticed about Rios, more so than Easterns, this year especially, how those Rios have ADHD. Like, you'll call, and they'll start coming, but you stop calling for 5 minutes, they're going to lose interest and walk away. Back to my Southwest Oklahoma hunt, I mean, we were done in the first 20 minutes. I mean, I was just hammering at those jakes. We had a group of like 15 jakes come into the decoys and just sit there. And I told them, I was like, hey, if you don't want to shoot, we'll wait. But they never left and we shot.
Sure.
But we'd call. They'd come up the fence line. They didn't see anything. They'd turn around and walk away. Mm-hmm. Call again. Same thing for 30 minutes. And then I start scratching the ground and they're like, okay. They slipped under the fence and come in. But even with my wife's turkey that she shot and missed, there it was, we'd call, he'd come up strutting, and then he'd just turn away. And he'd just keep doing that. As opposed to Easterns, they just won't even give you the time of day if they're not going to come in.
Right.
But if they do, then they're, you don't have to make a noise and they're coming in. Hmm. So it's, yep. And I'm interested to see, obviously, I've heard that Merriam's are the same way as Rio's, a little, you know, stupider even.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just the vast contrast between Merriam's and Osceola's, because I hear that they don't gobble anything. Or they might, but very seldom. So, this year really taught me that I like hunting Rio's a lot more than I like hunting Easterns.
You know, and by the way, I can sit there and watch, binge watch like Can't Stop the Flop. I'll watch that show. I'll watch the same episode like multiple times over.
Mm-hmm.
I like his personality, and you know, a lot of the early stuff they're doing in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I got down there, I bet you it would be a blast. I mean, it's certainly a different type of hunting than what I've ever done.
Yeah.
But I think if I get a chance to do either Florida or heading west, I gotta pick, you know, I'd do it just for the sake of getting one more on the wall that's a different species. Yeah.
Absolutely. Would you do Florida with a shotgun, or would you do it with a rifle?
Can you shoot them with a rifle?
Mm-hmm. In Florida, really? You can use a rifle.
Man,
that's actually crazy.
I think I'm sticking with my shotgun.
I'd want to do a rifle just to say, yeah, I shot this bird with a rifle from 300 yards or however long, you know.
That's insane. Mm. So I told you that Jim Richmond, he shot one with his bow, and he just zipped it at 40 yards. I mean, he zipped it.
Dang.
So the neat thing about this ranch is that they have a walk-in cooler. And so what we did was, for the most part, because it was pretty hot down there, is we'd kill and either skin or breast out, get the legs out, whatnot. And so we had the cooler in there where the bird that he killed, and I can't remember the exact scenario, guys. I think it was just late at night. He went ahead and he gutted the bird and he took out all the stuff around the neck. So it was like hanging a deer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the next afternoon, evening, we got done. I think we'd killed a bird and whatnot. I was like, let's just go butcher them all, right? Let's go do that. So he's sitting there, like I'm on one side of the skin shack, he's on the other side of the skin shack, and he's like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, what? And he goes, come look at this. The way the arrow entered that bird, I mean, there was only like this much stuff hanging. I mean, it almost took the neck completely off. And I mean, it wasn't like he was necessarily trying to do that, but just the angle of the bird had turned. He shot it up as the fan was up, and it went straight through, and the bird just dropped. It didn't run. It didn't do. It just it just hit the ground and goes. As that happened, the tom that was with it jumped on it and started flogging it. And while that happened, another tom came running off the hill and started fighting. I mean, it was, I'm telling you, there's turkeys like no one's ever seen down there. But I've never seen a hit. I've not seen many turkeys shot with the bow, but I've never seen it do what it did to that bird. It was incredible. That bird wasn't going anywhere by any stretch of the imagination. So,
yeah, I've seen, and I really want to get them, but the guillotine broadheads for a turkey. I've seen some videos, and it'll make your gut wrench with how devastating they are.
Yeah,
but slow-mo. That would just be so. That's such a neat like experience. Like this year recently, I've gotten into bow hunting a lot more because of Austin and Just One Outdoors. But now it's like, why not mix the two? Why not mix turkey hunting and, you know. Then I've also seen some videos of guys that put their decoys on the end of their bow and that, like, just reaping turkey that way.
Yep.
That has my peak interest right now. So, I mean, kind of, I had a question and I forgot it. So Austin, you take it.
You need to get one of those Ultimate Predator ones. That's the turkey. Yeah. And they double for, I've seen a guy use them. Like if he's in his saddle, he'll have his bow with that turkey so that when a deer comes by, it just sees this turkey and doesn't think anything of it.
Huh. Yeah.
I don't know if it'd work, but they posted that video and I was like, I may have to try that. But
yeah,
is one of the questions I had is like, do you know, and you may not, but is that just like common across the board in Texas? Like, are there just turkey down there because people don't hunt them, or is this just specific to this area?
So the ranches that we hunted last year versus the year before, about 40 miles apart, totally different topography. Like it was as flat as a pancake down there where we were 2 years ago. This was way different.
Huh.
Here's my theories on this. All right. So first off, there's a lot of land down there. I mean, there's a lot of it. And so even though you've got your pigs and other predators down there, these rios just seem, I think that's why I like hunting them too, is like they just seem like they're tough birds, is what they are. I think the other thing happens to be, though, that you're right. I don't think a lot of people are hunting them. They're hunting whitetail, they're hunting exotics. But, you know, for me, I think Jack's this way, and I know Trevin, you are, I'm kind of ate up with hunting turkeys. I love hunting deer. They certainly provide more meat in the freezer, and I mean, they're cool to look at, but, you know, and I've called some deer in with grunting and whatnot, but I mean, and this is why I love waterfowl hunting too, is I like the conversation with the birds, and I like trying to manipulate them to do what I want them to do. That's where I get the most thrill out of it, and I'm not opposed to shooting a Jake either. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, I've had some Jakes come in all puffed up, gobbling, and ready to do whatever. And that's, I think, what I love about it. Even talking to Nick the other night, Nick Lake, our head coach, you know, we got together and was doing some planning for Fit to Hunt, and we started talking. And again, I've got a good one up on my farm that we're watching. He's got one that could very well tip the scales of 200 inches this year if it does what it's supposed to do. And
so where's that one at?
Part's unknown. You know what he does, don't you? What's a suburban hunter. These are like in municipalities. He gets permission, and these deer are just—it's insane. I killed both of my bucks last year in suburban hunts. So, but and I love it, and I love when it's deer season. I love, but man, when we can chase those birds like they are, and the vocalizations that they have, and just that cat and mouse, the chess game that goes with it, it's different than whitetail hunting. Whitetail's either gonna come to you or they're not. It's not like, you know, you're gonna be able to necessarily truly change their course. You might snort weeds or you might, but I don't think it's exactly the same as when you can hop on a call and get them to come to you. I think it's a little different.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. I think another thing with turkey hunting is, you know, like, we're going out as like almost like a team. You know, it's you can go out with, like, Trevin and I can go out and sit in a deer stand, and yeah, it's going to be fun, but there's something about, like, that constant strategy, like you were saying, the cat and mouse, where I'm going, okay, Trevin, drop back 50 yards, call, and then, you know, sprint 100 yards to the west and call again. And, you know, just, like, trying to, like you said, manipulate that bird, I think is a lot of fun. And, you know, you can do it with deer, but that deer almost has to be in range before you can do it. You know, with turkey, you can almost, like you guys did in Texas, walk 100 yards, call, walk 100 yards, call, and all of a sudden you strike one up, and, you know, you didn't even know it was there. So I think there's something special about that that makes it more fun, like, during the hunt. I think, obviously, like, deer is more rewarding, but also for, like, I took a guy out. I've taken two guys out over the past year that have never been hunting before, one turkey and one deer. And during turkey season, you know, I had a hen 10 yards from us, and for 30 minutes, this hen and I are going back and forth. And then for deer, we didn't see a single deer. Right. And they both got value out of it. But the one guy that went turkey hunting has told me many times, he's like, dude, that was so cool. Like, you were talking with that bird. Yeah. And you were having a full-blown conversation. You know, it sounded like two angry, you know, sisters fighting each other. Like, just yelling back and forth and all that. And he was blown away by that, even though he didn't get to shoot. Right. You know, and the guy who I took deer hunting still got something from it, because he was like, there's something about getting out in nature, regardless of what you're doing. But turkey hunting provides that, where you can take a new hunter and keep it entertaining. Even for us that have done it a while, and I don't consider myself like an expert turkey hunter, but for you two especially, you know, you can go out and you can take a new person that's never been and keep it fun. And you guys could know there are not birds out there, but you could keep it entertaining because you're calling, and, you know, you may be like, oh, there's a gobble, you know, and it could be on the neighbor's property, but you can still be like, hey, let's get over here. Let's move here. Let's do this. Let's try to get it to cross the fence. And it keeps it entertaining for especially that new hunter that's never been before.
I took my wife a couple times this year. And, you know, we got as close as you can get without pulling the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great hunt because the birds were vocal. When they did shut up, you know, we're sitting there and I'm like, this don't feel right. So I hooted and they were there. They just an Easter. They decided they weren't going to go. I mean, we did everything right and everything that you could possibly do to get a turkey. And that's the beauty of turkey hunting, is that the very next day you do the exact same things and that bird's going to run right into you. But I also think, and this is why, like I said, going back to the argument of inches versus, you know, this goblin bird, is that I can shoot a Jake and be excited.
Mm-hmm.
I can shoot a gobbler and get up there, and you never know what you're going to get. It might have a 12-inch beard. It might have, you know, 3-inch fur, you know, just big old hooks. It might have a broken off one. You know, you don't know. And everything is awesome. You know, they're beautiful birds. You're going to get some cool feathers. But I don't care, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. If I've called that bird in and I've worked it, then I've earned that bird.
I said it's a trophy.
Yeah, it's a trophy. It doesn't matter how big it is. And I feel like we don't get too lost on that, on especially deer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been blessed to take some good ones. I was telling him the other day, it's like, you know, I think I'm going to be as patient as I can possibly be this year. And just, you know, we've got two or three on camera that I think could be special. If not, we hunt suburban and they want us to whack does. We can fill freezers with does all mm-hmm. day long. Let's get a little more selective, I guess, if you will. And we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. And kind of what you're saying, people get too hung up on how big a buck is, whereas like any gobbler is a mature gobbler. Like, you're not going to pass up a gobbler coming in, you know, whereas it could be, you know, maybe a 3-year-old deer. I mean, I'm very curious as to how people judge ages of deer, like, without actually having a sample of either their teeth. Right. I know teeth is a big thing, but, I mean, you get a mature gobbler coming in, you know it's a mature gobbler.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I think deer hunters take the fun out of it almost. Mm-hmm. Of, oh, I gotta wait. This is a giant buck, but I'm gonna wait. Whereas, like, big gobbler coming in, let's kill him.
Yep. Well, shoot, did you all, and you may not have, but I posted a video yesterday. I was working down in southeast Missouri, and I happened to stop by my dad's to pull two game cows. I just wanted to see what was on there. And I come around the corner, and there's 12 birds standing there, mm-hmm. and they were all jays. And we've not seen that number of birds in a decade. Like in one spot. And you know, so some of those birds are going to die. I mean, nature's going to get them. But I mean, to think about next year, you've got 2-year-olds running around there, you know, all screaming their head off, because there's enough habitat. They get the food, the water, the cup, they got it. So I believe in Missouri, I can't remember, I think this is correct, I think in Missouri you can trap as early as August. I have to check that. And our plan is, if that's the case, both on the northern Missouri and the southern Missouri farms, we're just going to take weekends, and we're going to go take care of as mm-hmm. many nest predators now as we can. So that hopefully, with that crop of 2-year-olds that comes around next spring, maybe we tag a few of those birds, but then the hens have a fighting chance of raising a good clutch after that.
Yeah.
And we could go on a whole different tangent. I love the habitat side of things. That's if I wasn't doing what I do full time and what I do for Fit to Hunt, I mean, I'd love to work for a conservation organization, because I mean, I really do enjoy the habitat side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, this question really came to me today. Austin and I were talking about fall turkey hunting. Is that something that you guys participate in? Because I hold a very strong, I don't know, I grew up doing it with my dad and grandpa, you know, it holds a very special place in my heart, but I also see that it's not helping shooting hens sometimes, you know, especially with how turkey population is nowadays.
So in the good old days, you know, early 2000s, we did, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was also before I started bow hunting. I actually got into bow hunting in my 30s, so it wasn't like I just was, you know, young and doing this. And what I realized pretty quickly, once I started bow hunting, was like, okay, now we've got all this time that I can chase a deer. I'd hate to be in the woods with a shotgun trying to kill a fall bird, which we've done, and we've had some great fall hunts. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Big Guy walks by, and I'd rather have a bow in my hand where I could shoot both if I wanted to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a spring purist now. I mean, I want to hear him gobble. I want to hear him. I want him strutting. I want him coming. That's what I want to see. But I can tell you, right now, very fond memories of fall hunting. He was very young. We went out one morning, and it was your classic fall hunt. There was a ton of birds at Dad's, a bunch of poults pitched out over here. There was a hen over on this side, and we just let her have it, and she mm-hmm. came on a dead rope run mad. I mean, mm-hmm. she was right there. He was probably 8, 9 years old, and he shot over her head. I mean, it was right there. But I mean, you can have great fall turkey hunts, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't want to do it again, but I do, with as few of birds as there are running around here, and someone may hear this and be like, you're crazy, I'm hunting fall turkeys, and that's fine. I don't care. You do what you got to do. For me, I love the spring aspects to it. You know, we've called them. We've called gobblers in the fall. It's just different. It's not the mm-hmm. same.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly why I'm going out and archery hunting elk in September and not taking my rifle out where I could be more successful, is because I'm like, I want the experience. I want to hear them, you know, bugle. I want to hear that. And, you know, it's the same thing. You know, they'll still make noise in the fall like the turkey will, but the gobble in the spring, that's something special.
Yeah.
Even my wife, you know, she's like, she's gotten to a point where she really loves to hear the gobble. And as the season was wrapping out, I mean, that was the one thing. It wasn't that the fact that we had a few more I mean, we killed a lot of turkeys this year. There was nobody that was sad about, you know, but it was that. It was the pure listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'd gone myself that last weekend, and I came, same farm out in Bourbon, and I mean, he had to show himself. That's just it. He was there. He was right there. And you know what I'm talking about when you can feel them in your chest. When they gobble yep. so loud, you can feel them in your chest. And it was awesome. And, you know, regardless of whether I killed that bird or not, those type of moments right there when you're that close to a bird, it's magical. And mm-hmm. I don't know. You know what? So Nick can take or leave turkey hunting, right? He's all whitetail all day, every day.
Mm.
And I don't know if this is a fair statement. I think you either are infatuated with turkey hunting or you're not. I don't know that there's a whole lot of in between when it comes to, you know, there's people that are like, you know, I can go do it. But I think you're either ate up or you're not. I don't think that. And if you're ate up with it, it gets in your blood bad is what it does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I as someone that hasn't been turkey hunting very long, I could say, like, I was kind of the... mm-hmm. before I killed my bird, and then I killed my bird, my one bird that I've killed. And this year I hunted almost every day.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I powered through those days that, you know, I didn't hear a gobble at all, but I was back out there the next morning and,
mm-hmm.
and that I think you're right with people who would just like dive into it.
How bad did you all feel on the last day of season? Because I'm going to tell you what, I ran myself ragged for a month. I mean, I didn't feel healthy.
Oh, yeah. I felt awful. I will say, like, there were things that I was doing during turkey season. There were things that I was doing that had it not been for, like, workouts I did with the Strutter program,
yeah,
I wouldn't have been able to do as effectively. I could have still done it, but there were times when I was like, well, that was easy to move like that. Yeah. And it was all, I instantly went back to thinking, well, it's because I've been doing this Strutter program that mm-hmm. has been preparing me for it. So
yeah,
I definitely noticed a difference this turkey season in how I felt physically. But man, after turkey season, waking up that much, whew, I was tired. But
yeah, I think for me, the last day of season was probably like, it was the cherry on top. For me, my last day in Missouri, I shot a stud. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the day before, I mean,
stud, 5-inch beard.
Yeah. Day of just hunting. Like, I hunted 7 days in a row in Lebanon without, I got reasonably close to one gobbler. He was about 45 yards away, and I should have taken a shot. But other than that, I just did not get close, and it was wearing on me. And I was just like, you know what? I killed one in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm all right. And then I got an invite to hunt in Mount Vernon and sealed the deal, and that was awesome. And then I knew I was taking my wife back out to Western Oklahoma. But that experience kind of set it for me as like, okay, this is the perfect, you know, last day. Yeah, she shot and missed, but that bird did everything we wanted it to. And after that, I mean, having 7 days in a row, or probably 10 days in a row of getting 5 maybe hours of sleep,
mm-hmm.
I was used to it, but the very next day I was in bed till like 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I was exhausted, but I mean, you know, just like me, I'll do it every single time. February rolls around, and I'm like, I'm already trying to set that internal clock of like, hey, we'll start waking up at 5 o'clock. We'll start, you know, getting ready.
Yep.
Start watching YouTube videos.
Start listening to the gobble. But
yeah. Start practicing with the Beatty custom call.
Beatty custom call. proud sponsor of the Just One Outdoors podcast. So we're kind of wrapping up this episode here. Jack, we do a segment at the end called Around Our Campfire. It's kind of, we're sitting at the campfire, you know, at turkey camp, deer camp, wherever we're at, and you're sharing a piece of advice. At your young age, what would your piece of advice be to us old farts?
I don't know. I guess just stick with it. And that's something he always hammered into me, is just don't give up, you know? Like you guys were just talking about, one day you can hear no gobbles, the next day they can be all over the place. Like,
mm-hmm.
It only takes one bird, you know?
Did he just, like, perfectly quote our, like, closing? Like, don't give up. All it takes is just one.
Yep.
I think you did.
That's literally how we end our episodes. And you just perfect. But that's literally the advice we give. Because I was just saying, had it not been for that bird, and that bird took me 4 years to get. And now I'm hooked. And I went another season where I didn't kill a bird. But I'm still like, I'm more of a deer hunter than turkey, at least for now. But I still have that clock set for, you know, like Trevin was saying, February. Here we go. It's time to start doing some scouting, figuring things out, because turkey season's here. So, but guys, I really appreciate you being on the show. Trevin, thanks for being a guest co-host. This is going to become more of a normal thing as we move forward. We're really looking forward to it. It's going to add some personality, I don't know what you bring, so I'm just going to say personality.
Yeah. And I'm just here.
But we're really excited for what Just One has coming, what Fit to Hunt has coming. You guys are going to be seeing, if you're not following all of us, make sure you're following. You're going to see some fitness journeys from Trevin, myself, these two as they train. Jeremy, Jack, where can people find you on, like, social media?
So you can find us on Instagram at Fit to Hunt Official. YouTube is just Fit to Hunt. And then the website itself is just stayfittohunt.com.
Perfect.
Jack, where can they follow you at?
Just Jack Herbert.
Just Jack Herbert.
My name, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very popular Instagram channel, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know, something like that. Yeah.
It's one in the making.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's already shown me up on being an absolute turkey slayer, so.
Yeah.
But, guys, thanks for being on. If you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave it a like, share it, leave a review wherever you're listening to it. It helps our episodes get out there to more people and get more people in the woods, which recently there's been kind of some odd things, which we could go through on how people are talking about how new hunters are the enemy and stuff. Ultimately, at Just One, we want to get more people outdoors, and with all these guys that are on the podcast tonight, it's the same way. They want to get more people outdoors to experience what we've got to experience, you know, chasing Rios, chasing Easterns, chasing the big buck, whatever it is. Just make sure you don't give up, because all it takes is just one.